judges of the United States Court of Appeals and the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention, that this court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court.
I understand we have two admissions, please. Who is coming up first, please? Take one at a time, please. I don't care who goes first. All right. Go ahead. Proceed, please.
My name is Julie Boynton. I'm a member of the bar here. I move to admit Joseph Gentleman to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Mr. Gentleman is a member in good standing of the Illinois Bar. He graduated from John Marshall Law School in May of 98 and was admitted to the Illinois Bar in June of 98. I've known Mr. Gentleman for about 4 years. He's worked at the law office of Don Johnson. I've had occasion to work with him on cases and also consult him on cases. I know him to have outstanding personal integrity.
In short, he's a true gentleman. Go ahead.
Okay. So I move to have him admitted to the bar standard. Thank you.
I suppose you're used to listening to things like that.
So are admitted.
Thank you.
Congratulations to you. Please walk over here and take the oath. All right, sir.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Thomas Fleischman, and it is my pleasure to move the admission to this bar of Ricky Hammond. Mr. Hammond is a 1998 graduate of John Marshall Law School, admitted to the Bar of Illinois and Indiana, has lectured extensively and published extensively in the area of insurance defense. I have known Mr. Hammond for over 3 years and his excellent integrity, and I am pleased to move his admission.
In spite of the fact his name isn't the same, he's a perfect gentleman too, I suppose.
All right, sir. You're accepted. Congratulations to you. Please walk over here and take the oath. Thank you very much. Can we proceed, please, with case number one? Platinum Technology versus Federal Insurance.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kirk Jenkins, and I represent the appellant, Federal Insurance Company. This case comes before the court on appeal from a judgment for just short of $9.5 million against my client in an insurance coverage case. We ask that the court reverse and remand that judgment for a new trial on several grounds as set forth in our brief, three of which I'd like to talk about briefly today. And I'll quickly outline those three before returning and considering each in slightly more detail. First of all, the trial court held that every dollar of the consideration paid by PTI, the insured, in the underlying lawsuit was to settle the lawsuit, when in fact the evidence shows quite clearly that a significant fraction of that consideration, if not all of it, was paid for the purchase of a trademark. Secondly, about half of the judgment here consists of the value of certain OEM product purchase credits. A highly speculative conditional liability, the valuation of which is based on several assumptions which have no support in the record. Third and last, there's an award of prejudgment interest here that was made at the equitable rate rather than the Illinois statutory rate. Now, because the amount due here was never liquidated until the date of the judgment, there shouldn't have been an award of prejudgment interest in the first place. But even if such an award were justified, this was a breach of contract case. There were no equitable claims. And the Illinois law specifically bars an award of interest at the equitable rate in a breach of contract case. Now for the trademarks. The settlement agreement specifically says that part of the consideration here is being paid for the purchase of the trademarks. Mr. William Pizer, the lead negotiator for PSC on the deal, said the same thing. There is no dispute that PTI, the insured, booked a $4 million trademark asset after this deal and began to depreciate it. And even the testimony of PTI's executives is consistent with this analysis. Those executives said, no, we weren't just after closing the books on the past events. the claims that had accrued, the claims that we were being sued on. We wanted to go right on doing what we were doing. We wanted to go right on infringing that trademark. And we didn't want to be bothered by lawsuits in the future for future conduct. Now, as Daniel Schechter, the lawyer for PTI, pointed out to his client, the only way you can get protection like that is to purchase the primary right that you're planning to invade. And that is what PTI did. The purchase of a trademark is not an insurable event pursuant to the Killer Music case and the other cases that we've cited to the court. Now, undoubtedly, what counsel for PTI is going to stand up and say is that those same executives said that the trademark was worthless, the trademark was of no use to us. Now, the question that counsel has never answered, I believe because there is no good answer to it, is how could that be that that trademark is worth nothing, but the lawsuit for infringement of that trademark is somehow worth hundreds of millions of dollars? Now, counsel can't have it both ways.
What obligations do they have to compartmentalize this settlement? I mean, if you had honored the duty to defend and you'd have been in this case from the beginning, you could have watched out for whatever interest the insurance company might have had on covering or not being forced to pay for uninsured losses here. But what if they just had settled for $10 million? It was evidence that this claim was potentially worth a lot more than that. So they settled for $10
million.
Why can we go behind that basic settlement figure and find out how much was allocated for this trademark, which they say was worth it?
Your Honor, first of all, we respectfully disagree that the evidence was sufficient to show that $10 million was a reasonable settlement.
Well,
but
they
more
had some lawyers that said they had a potential exposure of $100 million, didn't they?
Your Honor, candidly, because the lawyers say it so doesn't make it so. The lawyers never explained the objective reasoning behind their conclusion in a way for the district court to be able to say, well, you're right or you're not right. They simply said, we believe the exposure here is $100 million. But the more direct answer to your question is this. The testimony below was that PTI would never have paid the amount they paid without that protection from future lawsuits for future conduct. That's an admission that they wouldn't have paid $10 million if they hadn't acquired that trademark, because that's what they were ultimately after. And that's the bottom line reason why we're entitled to an allocation. Now, an additional answer to the court's question is there is significant authority under Illinois law, United States Gypsum, West America Mortgage, Illinois Tool Works, for the proposition that even, and most recently the Guillen case out of the Illinois State Courts, that even where there's a breach of the duty to defend, that doesn't change the fact that the insurer can still come in, despite the estoppel, which we acknowledge, and say, well, the estoppel aside, there are certain elements here that aren't insured. There aren't insurable items. The insurance company retains that right under Illinois law, and that's what we're arguing for here.
Didn't the trial judge find all of their witnesses to be credible?
Yes, he did, Your Honor, but our argument is that...
Are you asking us to go behind that?
Your Honor, we believe that the testimony of the PTI executives is not consistent with the argument that there was no interest in buying the trademark. We believe that the plain meaning of the PTI executives' testimony is that they wanted protection from future lawsuits for future conduct. And that's a statement that they wanted those trademarks. So, yes, we believe the evidence clearly indicates that there was an interest on the part of PTI in buying these trademarks and that they, in fact, did buy the trademarks.
You're talking around what I asked you. I said, how do we get behind his finding? If all of these witnesses were highly credible.
Well, Your Honor, even if
that's
this...
the question.
Well, you get behind the finding by clear error review, Your Honor, is the short answer to the question. You conclude that the interpretation was clearly erroneous.
Well, where do we find that in this record?
the testimony of the PTI executives, Your Honor. We believe that it clearly indicates that what the PTI executives wanted was to acquire the trademark. We believe that's where the clear error lies. Now, we don't concede that clear error is the proper standard of review for this trademark issue, because the settlement agreement, the terms of the settlement agreement are in the record. There's no real dispute over what the settlement was. And the question of whether that constitutes covered damages is a pure question of law, which this court reviews de novo. But to move on to the OEM credit, counsel for, excuse me, PTI has relied on authority which holds that a future payment of a sum certain, it doesn't matter for insurance coverage purposes whether that amount hasn't been paid yet. Well, the problem is this isn't a sum certain. This is a conditional liability with the conditions largely within the control of the plaintiff in the underlying action. And there is no authority for the proposition that such a conditional liability has to be paid by the insurer immediately with no consideration of whether that condition will ever come to pass. And in fact, PTI has never had to pay a dollar, to our knowledge, on these credits. But even if that weren't true, the valuation of these credits was based on the testimony of PTI's expert, Mr. Dudney. Mr. Dudney made a number of assumptions for which there was no support in the record. He said this was lost income to PTI because he made a but-for analysis. He said any sales that ultimately come out of this are going to be at the expense of sales that PTI would have made. So they push out PTI sales dollar for dollar. Well, there's no proof of that in the record. There's no way of knowing how this will happen because it's never happened yet. These credits have never been used. And furthermore, he said that any sales of supplemental software or upgrades, those sales would have been made anyway. Once again, there's no proof of that in the record because the factual assumptions are no good, the expert opinion falls, and because Mr. Dudney's opinion is the basis for this portion of the judgment falls. Now, the prejudgment interest. This dispute over the trademark and the dispute over the OEM credits mean that the amount due here was never liquidated. There was always a dispute. The amount due could have been anywhere from $1 to $10 million. So there never should have been an award here in the first place. But even if that weren't true, this was a pure breach of contract action. There were no equitable claims here. Illinois law specifically bars an award of prejudgment interest at the equitable rate in a pure breach of contract action with no equitable claims. Mere breach of the duty to defend is not enough. What it comes down to, with all due respect, is the district court awarded an equitable award of interest here because the court felt like the statutory rate wasn't high enough. Now, that's simply not a decision for the district court to make. We ask that the court reverse and remand for a new trial, and unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve for rebuttal.
May it please the court, John Zabriskie on behalf of the plaintiff Appley Platinum Technology Inc., which I'll refer to as PTI. The district court in this case, sitting as the finder of fact and hearing the evidence over the course of a multi-day trial which generated over 900 pages of transcript, found that the underlying settlement of the trademark action was in fact of a reasonable amount and was in fact a true settlement as opposed to some disguised business deal.
Mr. Zabriskie, I have not read the entire 9,000 pages, I confess.
900.
900, well, that's why. I should be able to read 900. But I have the distinct impression that part of the settlement involved the purchase of a trademark.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. It involved...
Tell me why not.
It involved the assignment of certain trademark rights.
What's the difference between the purchase of trademark rights and the assignment of trademark rights?
The difference is that, as the district court found, the purpose of the assignment was to achieve help ensure the finality of the settlement of the underlying trademark action. Under Illinois law that applies when an insurance company repudiates its obligation to defend, an insured has the right to enter into a settlement.
I wasn't disputing your right to enter into a settlement. I was disputing whether or not what you settled for was something more than, in addition to what you did. Part of it was the purchase of the trademark right.
It was not the purchase because the assignment of the
trademark. Do you have the trademark right now?
Yes, we have the trademark
did
right.
Did you have the trademark before the settlement?
We did not. But the district court.
Whatever the district court said, you tell me why it isn't the sale of a trademark.
It's the assignment of a trademark that gave Platinum no additional value different than what it had before it was sued. The district court found.
Wait, you mean it had a right to use the trademark before the settlement?
The use after the settlement.
No, before the settlement.
No, it did not. But the use.
Well, then it did acquire the right to use the trademark as a result of the settlement.
Actually, the use under the settlement agreement of those trademarks continued to be used by PSC pursuant to the license back agreement that was.
And you can use it.
Pardon me?
And you can use it.
We could use it, but we wouldn't use it because.
Well, you can't use it. You purchased the right to use it. You have
we
the
did
right
not purchase.
To,
well,
you have the right to use it as a result of the settlement.
But we wouldn't use it because it gives us no value for that.
Splendid. We're talking about what you negotiated for, aren't we?
We are, and the reason why it was included was because it assured that the part of the underlying trademark action that raised into question. PTI's ability to use its trademarks going forward.
You were using it inappropriately before, but now you have a right to use it. You were not using it inappropriately before?
There was a question raised as to that, and that was what was at
issue. $10 million question.
It was potentially.
Huh.
It was potentially. And the point is.
You got rid of the potential, but I want to know, what did you get for your 10 million?
We got resolution of that claim with finality, and we got nothing more because trademarks only.
But you had, did you have the right to use it before?
We did not.
Now you do.
But it's a use that has no value to us because we would never exploit it. Trademarks have a value only because they allow a particular producer to have its products recognized in the marketplace. With a particular trademark. Platinum Technology had many of its own trademarks which it was using. As the district court found, PTI had invested its marketing resources in having its products associated with its trademarks. After the settlement, the trademark usage by both of these companies was identical to the usage before the settlement. PSC continued to use its trademarks as before. PTI did nothing different, and therefore it got no incremental value from having this assigned title, the only purpose of which was to strip PSC of standing to sue it in the future. And it was entitled to do that because under Illinois law, an insured when its insurer breaches the duty to defend, has the right to settle the underlying suit in a reasonable manner as articulated under Illinois law. And that includes the right to settle the whole case. And the trademark action in the underlying case necessarily implicated PTI's right to use its marks going forward because there was a damage claim and then there was an injunction claim as there often is in trademark actions. And so as the PTI executives testified and decision makers testified in highly credible testimony, that was absolutely the only reason PTI acquired that mark, and the evidence showed that was the only real benefit it got because PTI didn't change its marketing. PSC continued to use the mark. Another piece of relevant evidence on which the district court relied is that if PTI had really wanted this stuff, it would have paid more for it than the de minimis amount that was on the table in 1996 before they were sued when PSC approached it about possibly changing its name. So for all those reasons, The district court's finding that based on the testimony of the PTI decision makers, which the district court found highly credible.
Was there any live testimony in this case?
Yes, there was considerable live testimony. There were 8 live witnesses.
It was mostly deposition testimony.
The testimony came in 2 forms. There were, I believe, 2 or 3 deposition transcripts. Then there were 8 live witnesses, which the district court saw and heard, including the PTI decision makers, the senior executives, Mr. Filipowski, the CEO, Mr. Cullinane, the CFO, Mr. Matthews, the head of the marketing, the 2 principal outside lawyers for Platinum, all testified live. Their direct testimony was submitted in written form, and so they were subjected then to a live cross-examination in front of the district court during the trial. And based on that, the district court made the finding, based on the evidence that I just outlined, including that highly credible testimony, that PPI got no value, business value, other than settling the lawsuit, which is its absolute right.
How do you respond to the argument that PTI saved about $2 million in marketing expenses as a result of this settlement?
The valuation of the OEM credit that's in the judgment already is net of the saved marketing costs. And the explanation for that lies in the fact that what PSC got in this settlement was not only a $6 million product credit, but it also got a 25% discount off the list price. And so what PSC is able to do is get $8 million of product for which it would have to pay PTI $6 million. That's the effect of the 25% product credit. The 25% discount, but then the product credit kicks in and they don't have to pay anything, so they get $8 million. Now that's $8 million of product that PTI would have sold. And there's considerable evidence in the testimony that those sales would have come at the PSC will come at the expense of sales PTI would make. Federal's principal brief went out of its way to say that the customers of PSC and PTI were very different, and that proves the point better even than I could, because that means PSC will be going out and not selling to its own customers, but will be selling to PTI customers. But in any event, if the OEM valuation were off the $8 million figure, then there might be an argument. But it's not. It was off the $6 million figure. And the difference between the 8 and 6 is already accounts for the avoided selling costs, is the answer to that question.
Okay.
Let me answer a couple other of additional points. First of all, Federal is absolutely wrong about Illinois law and the ability of an insurance company, which has repudiated the fundamental obligation to afford a defense, to come back after it's found to have breached that duty to defend and then challenge a settlement on the basis of its policy language. That's absolutely contrary to Illinois law and Illinois policy. This is not some mere breach of contract case. Illinois policy says that the duty to defend is a fundamental duty, and it wants to encourage insurers to not sit on the sidelines when there is such a claim. And so Illinois law says when that happens, insurer, you have to either defend under a reservation of rights or you have to file a declaratory judgment action. If you don't do those things and you're found to have wrongfully not given a defense, then we're going to impose a sanction. And that means you're not going to be able to rely on your policy terms going forward. And that means you may, in fact, be liable for a settlement that you otherwise wouldn't have been liable. Instead, you only get to challenge on the basis of the 3 elements of reasonableness under Illinois law, and those were adequately satisfied here. Let me briefly address the point about whether there was adequate evidence supporting the finding that the $10 million was a reasonable amount. There clearly was. The attorneys testified at length about the basis of their belief that PTI would be exposed to a possibly large damage award. They went through how such awards are calculated, and they applied the relevant financial figures. It's important to note in this regard that on summary judgment, a ruling that Federal is not appealing here, the district court found that one element of the reasonableness test, and that is that PTI settled the trademark action in reasonable anticipation of liability, meant that the attorneys at trial didn't have to explain why they thought, or explain in great detail, why they thought PTI might be liable. The issue was only the extent of the possible liability, not the basis of the liability. Finally, let me briefly address the prejudgment interest issue. Well, actually, before I do that, let me address this.
You had better address that point, John.
Okay. I will address it now then. First of all, the amount was liquidated, and an insurer doesn't get to claim that it wasn't liquidated just because it disputes the liability. It was a set amount. The amount awarded was exactly what was claimed. It was a readily calculable amount. That's not an obstacle. The equitable aspects of the case are that we did ask for a declaratory judgment, and the issue in this case, as I said, is not a mere breach of any old contractual obligation. It's a breach of a fundamental obligation to provide a defense under an insurance policy, and Illinois law and policy feel strongly about that, and imposes an equitable sanction of estoppel for breach of that duty. And Federal here was found to have repudiated that duty, and it is not appealing that finding. So that's the equitable component that makes it proper and not an abuse of discretion for the district court to have said, insurance company, you don't get to unjustly retain the benefit of withholding that money. On the OEM issue, there's considerable evidence about the OEM issue, and the district court found that it was a liability for which PTI should be compensated. The testimony and the evidence consisted of the following, and it's overwhelming. It consisted of the fact that it was PSC that requested the credits. It's undisputed that it's a continuing obligation. And the other important point is that the judgment, in fact, accounts for the fact that the credits haven't been used yet, because the valuation starting on the $6 million amount in part has been reduced because it assumes that the credits will not be paid out in a lump sum, but rather will be spread out over time. And Federal had the chance at trial to cross-examine PTI's expert on that point. It had the chance to put in its own testimony that there should be some longer use period, and it chose not to. Instead, it went for the extreme position that these will never be used, and the district court rightly rejected that position in light of all the testimony that I just outlined. And I see my time has expired, and so on that basis, and for the reasons stated in our brief, we request that the district court be affirmed. Thank you, counsel. Thank you.
Just briefly, Your Honors, counsel says that his client is entitled to achieve finality. He's correct in part. He is entitled to achieve finality by closing the books on the claims that have already arisen for past conduct. But finality in the insurance coverage area is not about, I can never be sued again for things I haven't done yet. That's not what insurance is about. That finality he is not entitled to. Counsel says that the trademark has no value to him. Here's what the value is. There is no chance now that PSC in the year 2005 will come in and sue PTI and say, we sue you for what you did between 2002 and 2005. That's the value of the fact that they now own this trademark. Number three, counsel says that we're dead wrong about the state of Illinois law as far as the ability to challenge a settlement as including uninsurable elements. Well, with all due respect, counsel is the one that's wrong, as we explained in the brief using the case law we cited there. If counsel's analysis were correct, the breach of a duty to defend would present the insured with a blank check to settle the case. The duty to defend and the duty to indemnify would then become coextensive. It wouldn't matter whether an action was arguably covered and therefore triggers the duty to defend. If the duty to defend is breached, indemnity follows. That's simply not the law. Finally, counsel talks about prejudgment interest. A declaratory judgment action is not automatically an equitable action. The law in Illinois is that a declaratory relief action takes on its character from the other claims in the action. So for our purposes, the deck action here was an action that founded in contract, not in equity. So it's still true, there were no equitable claims here. Now, counsel makes much of the breach of the duty to defend. Now, the devastating point to that argument is counsel has never cited a single case under Illinois law which has affirmed an equitable award of interest in a breach of the duty to defend case. That's why Illinois has Section 155 of the Illinois Insurance Code for vexatious and unreasonable conduct. The Section 155 claim in this case was summarily decided in our favor. Now, unless the court has any further questions, we'll submit.
Thank you, counsel. The court will take the case under advisement. Proceed.